Let's go ahead and dive into the Word, which is what we get together to do. Last time, we were talking about the death of John the Immerser. And that death had to have occurred sometime in the late winter, perhaps the very early spring of 32. And so Jesus had sent his disciples out in the previous several months on a 2x2, 12 apostles, 70 or 72 disciples, mission tour. They were to go out into all the places where Jesus was going to go himself and minister, and they would do the miracles. They would heal. They would cast out demons. They would cleanse lepers. Apparently, they were even supposed to be able to raise the dead on some instances. And that way, when Jesus arrived, the place would be prepped for him to do mostly teaching. That seems to have been the intention. Now, there is a secondary thing that happens, though. Because Herod is the tetrarch of Galilee, where all of this is happening, he starts getting these reports of miracles happening all over his country suddenly. And since he's just executed John the Immerser, he begins to wonder whether or not John the Immerser is back from the dead, perhaps haunting him, if you will. Herod Antipas seems to be very superstitious. And so he is wanting very badly to meet this Jesus in person. But that will not happen for another year. Because a year later, when Jesus is on trial before Pilate, he ends up being sent to Herod Antipas for that long-delayed interview. So we have to keep that in the back of our mind, that Herod thinks that Jesus might be tied in with John resurrected. But also, Jesus has just found out about John's execution. Because we have the report in Matthew, and I think also in Mark, that once John's disciples found that he was dead, they came and got the body and took it away and buried it. And afterwards, Matthew says, they went and told Jesus all about it. And this, according to Matthew's account, prompts Jesus to leave where he's at right now, ministering, which appears to be the Capernaum Bethsaida shoreline on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee, to head across to the east side of the Sea of Galilee. This is how Matthew puts it. It says in Matthew 11, verse number 12, his disciples came, took the body, buried it, and they went and told Jesus. Now, when Jesus heard this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a desolate place by himself. Now, he has his apostles with him. Basically, it means without the crowd. And we know that from Mark's account. And remember, Mark, according to very early traditions, seems to be retelling the stories that he heard from Simon Peter. So this is Peter's recollections. This is Mark chapter 6, verse 29. When his disciples heard of it, they came and took his body and laid it in a tomb. The apostles returned to Jesus and told him all they had done and taught. So this is the secondary thing that is happening right now. The 12 apostles are arriving back. Apparently there was some sort of agreement that they would all meet back at the Capernaum Bethsaida shoreline at a certain time period. It appears to me to be probably the turn of the year. So right around the first day of the first month of the Jewish year. And this will mark the beginning of Jesus' third year ministry. And we're talking about it being somewhere probably in April. It appears as if the second year of Jesus' ministry was a 13-month Jewish year. They have a 13th month every 3 years or so because of intercalendary adjustments. So the apostles are back, and so are the 12, or the 70 or 72. We talked about them last session, how they were all excited that they could even cast out demons. And Jesus told them, look, the thing you really need to be excited about is that you're saved. Your name is written in the book of life. It's encoded in heaven. And then it says here, verse 31, we're still in Mark 6. He said to them, come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest for a while. For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away to the boat to a desolate place by themselves. So now we've got a little bit more of the information. Jesus is wanting these guys to have a little downtime after weeks, maybe a few months, of being on their mission two by two, where they had to depend upon the kindness of strangers in each and every town, and they were probably responded to in a negative fashion in a few of those towns. So they're probably a little stressed out, and he wants them to have some quiet time away from the crowd that's already gathered again here on that north shore of the Sea of Galilee. And so they're going to jump in a boat. That's both Matthew and Mark tells us they're going to get in a boat and leave the Bethsaida and the Capernaum region. Now, look at Luke chapter 9, verse 10. On their return, the apostles told him all that they had done. So again, we've got that report of the last few weeks, last few months of the two-by-two ministry. And so he took them and withdrew apart to a town called Bethsaida. And now this is where things confuse some people because they don't understand there are actually two Bethsaidas on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee. But they are in two different countries, because the Jordan River, which dumps into the northern part of the Sea of Galilee, up there on the northeast corner, that's the dividing line, that's the border between Galilee on the west, where Herod Antipas is tetrarch of Galilee, and a place called Golanitas, what we call the Golan today, on the east side of the Jordan, where Herod Philip, a half-brother of Herod Antipas, is the tetrarch. And so Bethsaida, Galilee, is just a little less than 2 miles west of Capernaum. It has a different name today. But it is where the Church of the Primacy of Peter is located on the North Shore today. It's a very interesting place to go and put your feet into the Sea of Galilee. But Bethsaida that was in the Golan is also called Julia or Julius, because it's named after the, I think it's a relative of Caesar. And so they're going to leave the Capernaum and Bethsaida Galilee area on a boat and sail east just a few miles to the northeast corner of the Sea of Galilee where Bethsaida Julius is located. Now let me talk a little bit about the northeast corner of the Sea of Galilee. As you can appreciate, the Sea of Galilee has been dumping into, the Jordan River has been dumping into the Sea of Galilee pretty much since the end of the flood. And it has made a bit of a delta area or a built-up boggy area in that northeast corner. And that has caused the Romans of the time period we're looking at to make their Roman road go around this lower flat area on the northeast corner. And the modern day Jewish road follows that same path. So if you were to get out a map or say use Google Earth, you can see how the road goes around a little flat area of land on the northeast corner of the Sea of Galilee. Close to the Jordan River, on the east side of that open flat area, is where Bethsaida Julius was located. And so the place that Jesus is taking his disciples is to the desolate area, or the, we would say, the rural area, or the country area, to the southeast of Bethsaida Julius. It would have been agricultural area in the first century, where they would have grown certain types of grains that would have liked that rich delta-type soil. Today, I've gone past the place on a bus several times. It seems to be not used for agriculture today, unless they might have some orchards in there that I can't really spot from the bus. But that's the place that Jesus is trying to take them to be by themselves. Now, interestingly enough, John, the writer of our fourth gospel, jumps in with his part of this story as well. So we've got all four gospels going to tell this story for us. That must mean it's really super important, huh? So here's John chapter 6, introduction to this story. After this, Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. And I don't think we've heard this name before. It was starting to be called the Sea of Tiberias after Tiberius became the new emperor, and Herod Antipas built a new Gentile, mostly city, on the west side, the middle west side of the Sea of Galilee, and named it Tiberias. And so that's the reason it's also known by this name. So the other side of the Sea of Galilee means the eastern side. And this is what happens next. We have to go back to Matthew 14 for a little bit more information. Matthew 14, 13, the second half of the verse. But when the crowds heard it, heard that he was leaving to go to the east side of the sea, they followed him on foot from the towns. Because remember, there's a Roman road that goes right on the north side of the Sea of Galilee. It's actually on the north side of Capernaum proper. And it's only a matter of about 4 miles, I think, over to Bethsaida Julius, which is the next big city on the other side of the Jordan River. So these crowds, hearing that Jesus is sailing to the other side, they start running along the Roman road, heading for Bethsaida Julius. And as they go, they can keep an eye on the boat that Jesus got into. One of the things that surprises you, even though I was prepared for it mentally, it was still a bit of a surprise. When you're at the Sea of Galilee, you can pretty much see everything from wherever you're at along the shore. On a clear day, standing at Capernaum, you can see the southern shoreline, 11 or 12 miles away, how many miles away it is. And so you can watch a boat, an individual boat, and keep track of it as you're going along the Roman road, as it makes its way from Capernaum over to the northeast corner of the Sea of Galilee. I've got pictures that I took standing on the shore at Capernaum of the northeast corner. So these guys are making their way, trying to keep track of Jesus in the boat. This is from Mark 6, 33. Same information. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they ran there on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. So these guys are making their way fast. They are running as fast as they can, and perhaps the wind is a little contrary to the apostles in their boat, so they might have to row. And so the 4 miles by boat may take them a little longer than the 4 or 5 miles for these guys jogging so that they can get there ahead of it. Here's Luke's account, Luke 9:11. When the crowds learned it, they followed him. And then over in John chapter 6, verse 2, and a large crowd was following him because they saw the signs that he was doing on the sick. And so this crowd has now moved from the Capernaum, Bethsaida of Galilee area, along the north shore, past Bethsaida Julius, and down into this little rural area in that flat northeast delta region of the Sea of Galilee. And it's a big crowd. We will later find out that it's several thousands of men plus women and children. And then it says that Jesus went up on the mountain or the hillside. The place has hills all around it because the Golan Heights rise up on the east side of the Sea of Galilee. So Jesus apparently goes up on one of these slopes that's near this little border area, and he begins talking to them. He sat down with his disciples. And then John gives us the timing that I've already referred to. Now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was at hand. Now it hasn't arrived yet, and it may be because this is one of those 13-month years that preceded it. So the Passover is coming a little bit later in the schedule for the Jewish people. And so they've got a little bit more time that they've spent here before they head off to Jerusalem. But right around the first and definitely into the second week of the first month of the Jewish year, the Galilean pilgrims would always start traveling to Jerusalem. So they have not yet done that, but it's coming up really soon. And then let's go to Mark's gospel, Mark 6:34. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them because they were sheep, like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. This is Matthew's account, Matthew 14:14. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them and healed their sick. This is Luke's account, Luke 9:11, second half of it. He welcomed them and spoke to them of the kingdom of God and cured those who had need of healing. So Jesus had intended on this day to take his 12 apostles and perhaps maybe some of those 70 or 72, it's a little bit hard to tell, away on a little bit of a retreat to get on the boat and go away to the northeastern shore of the Sea of Galilee, get off in a remote area, and then I would suggest that he may have been planning on going farther up into the hills of the Golan to be farther away from these crowds. But he never made it because the crowds ran and beat him there, and when he saw them, he felt sorry for them. He had that feeling in the pit of his stomach. These guys are, they look like sheep that don't have anyone taking care of them. So what does he do? He heals some more of them. His apostles probably should have been helping in that as well. And so they're ministering, and then he sets down and he talks to them. He preaches to them about the kingdom. And of course, we know what his message always is: repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And then the day is over with. Let's start here where we ended, Luke 9:12. Now the day began to wear away, and the 12 came and said to him, "Send away the crowd to go into the surrounding villages and the countryside to find lodging and get provisions, for we are here in a desolate place." So as the sun is going down on the west shore, the 12 apostles come to Jesus and say, "Jesus, you got to tell these people to leave now before it gets dark. They need to go into Bethsaida Julius, or maybe they need to go down to Kersey or up to one of the other villages that are nearby and find a place where they can get some food and sleep at night." This is Matthew's account on that same one, Matthew 14:15. "Now, when it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, 'This is a desolate place. The day is now over. Send the crowds away to go into the villages and buy food for themselves.'" This is Mark's account, which is, of course, Peter's account. Mark 6:35. "When it grew late, his disciples came to him and said, 'This is a desolate place. The hour is now late. Send them away to go into the surrounding countryside and villages to buy for themselves something to eat.'" And then finally, let's start reading from John's Gospel, John 6:5. "Lifting up his eyes then and seeing that a large crowd was coming toward him." All right, now, we'll freeze all that together, because we got the four accounts that we need to weave together. So we've got the 12 apostles coming and asking Jesus, requesting him to send this crowd away before it gets dark, because there's nothing here. This is desolate area. This is countryside. Jesus' response in all three of the other gospels was basically this: they don't need to go away. You give them something to eat. And then here in John's gospel, Jesus singles out one particular guy on that very topic. He said to Philip in verse number 5, "Where are we to buy bread so that these people may eat?" So Jesus tells the apostles, "Hey, look, why don't you guys take care of them? Hey, Philip, where do you think you could lay your hands on enough bread to feed this crowd?" And Philip's response is this, verse 7, "200 denarii would not buy enough bread for one or for each of them to get a little bit." So 200 denarii is the equivalent of 200 days' wages. We are talking about several thousands of dollars. So Philip, doing a quick calculation in his head, looking around at everybody, goes, "Master, even if we could find a place that had enough food to sell, it would take thousands of dollars to do that." And then somebody, tells them one more thing. And for this one, let's see, let's go to Mark's Gospel, Mark 6:38. "He then said to them, 'Well, how many loaves do you have? Go and see.'" All right? So he tells them, "Okay, you don't think there's enough to buy, and we don't have enough cash on hand? Why don't you go around and rustle up what we do have?" Now let's go back to John chapter 6 and finish with one of the apostles' response on the bread search. This is verse 8. "One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, 'There is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. but what are they for so many? So it's Andrew that managed to find a kid, a boy, that had not eaten whatever food he had with him whenever this crowd started assembling earlier in the day, but it ain't much. It's like 5 slices of barley bread and a couple of dried fish. It's basically lunch for him. It is not nearly enough to feed everyone in this huge crowd, which is why we're set up now for Jesus' great miracle. Have a great weekend and a great Lord's Day. See you next time we get into the Word.